Hi everyone, welcome back to the Sacred Body Podcast. I am excited to welcome back one of my favorite people to talk to and listen to, Marin Green from Indie Birth. Just want to acknowledge, Marin, it was your podcast, Taking Back Birth, that inspired this podcast to exist. So thank you for that. And recently, Marin released a podcast on her platform about twins. And there's a lot to say about what compelled it and the content of it. I'll link to it so you all can go listen. But I was especially struck by something Marin said, which was, most women undereat in pregnancy. And it just hit me so deeply, because the truth of it ran so deep through my body and my maternal line, just like this deep understanding of how true that is, that women undereat in general, and this like ongoing cycle of women undereating, underfeeding themselves, being undernourished, and the myriad of problems that stem from that in our occupation of a place of power in our bodies, in culture, in families, in birth. So that's where I'm coming from, responding to that one seemingly simple phrase of yours, Marin, and I'm just so excited to dive in and unpack this with you a bit more.
Yeah, me too. Thanks for having me back on here. And when you asked, I thought, yeah, that'll be really fun. And it was maybe just shortly after I had released the podcast. And so, then more people went to listen to it and it was on social media. And I have to say, I was surprised and struck by how the eating component, which was only like maybe 20% of the podcast itself, really kind of blew up, at least on social media, for whatever that's worth, but was very triggering to a lot of people, and very interesting to other people who wanted more information. And so I guess, yeah, I'm saying the same thing. I was like really surprised that we're talking about pregnancy nutrition. It felt so basic in a way, but yet it's one of my passions and I know that it's not. So I'm excited to, like you said, kind of dive in and see if we come up with anything today.
Right. Well, I've said, and I actually have a client that I'm working with currently. I've known her for a long time and have witnessed her through a pretty severe eating disorder. I have my own history of that. And I remember at the start of our coaching journey, she was like, I'm just not interested in talking about food. Like, I'm really at a good place. And like, I know what I need and I feel power in that. And I was like, great. I think food's super boring, actually. And on the one hand, that's true. And on the other hand, it's like one of the most rich and exciting topics of conversation for me because of all that it's connected to. And I think that's like the crux of the conversation, is that so many people get fixated on the wrong things about food and miss the deeper component of like the human aspect of feeding ourselves and just the self-respect and auto like it goes into so many things. I'm
Yeah.
curious if there's anything like relevant or calling to you to be shared about your personal journey with food, whether related to your pregnancies or not.
Yeah, I wouldn't say I had any kind of eating disorder in sort of the classic ways that I feel like we talk about them and that I have seen in other women. But certainly, I grew up with what seems just really typical to me. Like, my mom was always trying to be thin, and my dad was always trying to do the same thing. And they still kind of are, and they're in their 70s. And I can kind of chuckle about it now because I feel so far removed from whatever that is. But certainly, as a growing girl, I think that does have consequences. So for me, in my first pregnancy, This was a hospital experience on purpose. This was seeing an obstetrician on purpose. No one ever said anything. And I very much mirrored my own birth as a baby. And by that, I mean, I went into pretty much preterm labor with my daughter. I mean, she was kind of on the verge. I don't know that some people would say it was preterm, but it was like 36 weeks. My water broke and, you know, rest of story. But my own birth was similar. I was born at 34 weeks. And so once I became a midwife and I learned just in one way, not all of the ways, one way, how simple it is that if we feed our bodies, that if we know and we can hold the needs of pregnancy, which are so different than when we're not pregnant, then it gives us so much power. And I really, really do still feel that deeply, which is how I at least try to approach it with people initially. There's so much power in the choices that we have. Yes, there's also overwhelm. There's also the emotional issues, all of the things. But I know for me, I really saw the connection, the very basic connection between if I feed my body, then I will have a full-term pregnancy. And it was that basic for me to commit to that with the rest of my 9 children, that it was one thing I knew I did have power over. And, you know, of course, there's so many things there we could talk about eating not being fun and not always even feeling hungry and appetite and the emotional part of eating. But again, just super basic that I knew it had long-term effects and that I wasn't willing to ever have a baby early again.
Yeah, well, that was critical information for me to hear too, that that can be a cause of preterm labor. I hadn't heard that explicitly before. And it was pretty shocking for me in both of my pregnancies. I was pretty hypoglycemic. Like, I was getting really strange physical symptoms and I was like, what the hell is going on? And my midwives, I had 2 separate midwives for each birth, and they were like, you need to eat more. And I was like, what are you even talking about? I'm eating all the time. You need more. So I was eating like Cliff bars between meals and barely gaining weight. And it was a really significant moment for me in my thinking. Almost like some part of me was like, I can't eat more. I'm not supposed to eat more. I shouldn't eat more. And how fucking crazy that felt to this other part of me that was like, this isn't about you. Like, it is, but it's also the most incredible undertaking a human being can endeavor to do, to grow another human from their body. And then I'm learning a bit more about preconception and egg health and kind of how quickly the refinement of that egg happens. And in Ayurveda, the sort of sequence of digestion is that whatever you eat becomes the final layer of tissue. There's 7 layers of tissue. It takes about 5 days for each layer of tissue to digest and assimilate what's been eaten. So what I ate roughly 35, 40 days ago is going to contribute to my menses, my egg health, my uterine health, my sexual health. And that's not any bit of the conversation, like how well I've been nourished up to this point of becoming pregnant. Everything I eat is like, in order to sustain and hold this growing life.
Yeah, that makes me think of, I think the key difference with a pregnancy and how someone's eating versus not being pregnant, which is obvious to you, I'm sure, we want to nourish. And I think just that word alone can bring up so much. And if we're really willing to sit with women and talk more about that, like, what is nourishment to you? It's not even just food, but in this state of wanting to like add on, wanting to grow, wanting to support, wanting to like bathe everything in you know, not just great minerals and vitamins, but like love and, you know, all of these amazing ways that we feed ourselves. So just that alone can spark a lot for someone. And maybe we'll get into like types of eating or types of food. You know, at the end of the day, I always say to women, like, I am supporting you with whatever is going to work for you. But traditionally, you know, we know animal products are really supportive of this phase for that reason, that they are really nourishing. And that if you're in more of a detox mode, which stereotypically can be associated more with, you know, I'm vegan, I'm raw or whatever, our bodies seem to interpret that as a way to rid ourselves of things or to clean out, right? That's kind of how we associate cleanses or things like that. So anyway, just getting really clear that if we could at least agree on nourishment being our focus, then whatever someone's doing, we can talk more about maybe how to kind of shape it into that. But you have to be in a mode of receiving, I think, in your pregnancy, rather than repelling or like cutting down or, you know, really limiting.
Yeah. I think there is a fear of size. Like,
yeah, let's talk about that. That's the
willingness to build and grow. And it's like 9 to 1 pregnant women that is like, I'm afraid of getting big. I'm afraid of gaining weight. I'm afraid of what will happen to my body. I'm afraid, I'm afraid, I'm afraid, I'm afraid. And like, like, what is that? What is that fear that's so universal in the female body? I'm afraid of taking up space. And then we have this like extreme social media messaging about like, take up space, take up, like, but it's so disingenuous and it has nothing to do with the actual substance of your human beingness. It's like, just be loud, just have more opinions, just wear more provocative clothes. It has nothing to do with like, eat that fucking side of beef and slather it in ghee and drink your raw milk before you go to bed. Bitch, you gotta do that. Especially if you're growing a baby. And I just wanna acknowledge that just what I said a few minutes ago, I was willing to eat for my baby, but there's still a hesitation to eat for myself. There's still a hesitation to really feed myself. And like acknowledge and honor how much I need, whether it's food or affection or attention or time or rest.
Yeah.
Still a big healing process. And I don't think I'm unique in that.
And I'm not immune to those thoughts either. I can cite many moments in most of my pregnancies, especially the last few, where I needed way more food than I ever thought possible, but so many moments where I just hated it. I hated eating that way. I hated having to eat. Yes, I was willing to do it, but it didn't even always feel good. You know, it felt like, why am I force feeding myself? And so I have utmost compassion for the women I work with, or, you know, women that come my way for any kind of advice or help. It's like, I get it. I've been there. And I can't explain it. Like, I don't know always why it feels that way when we live in this world, especially natural birth and all of this intuitive parenting, that like, oh, if it's not intuitive eating, or, you know, if you don't feel hungry, then you shouldn't force yourself to eat. And I say, sometimes you just have to fuck that. Like, when you're pregnant and you're on your 9th pregnancy, it doesn't matter if you're hungry. It doesn't matter, because your body and your baby need the food, and you can't even quite equate what might be going on in your mind or emotions at that point anyway. So you either decide to go ahead and you do it, or you know, you kind of do fall into the like, well, maybe it's not really what I need. And I've seen women do that too. And almost always, you know, they kind of get into that hamster wheel where they're not eating, they have no appetite. And they really want to tell me that that's intuitive eating, and I just don't buy it. I think we're so far from that as a culture that, I don't know, that's my own just like truth there, I guess.
Yeah, I think there's something of a badge of honor that is for women about like how little they manage to get by on when it comes to food. And that's something, I mean, I think that that is something deeply ancestral. That might be like the most prevalent and universal expression of like female oppression. It's like, oh, look at me. Look how much I can do on so little. And then it comes to bear during our postpartum time. Like, I hesitate to use this word, and it's a nuanced conversation for sure. I know this is going to be activating for some, but like the victimhood that comes along with motherhood for so many. And I acknowledge motherhood is incredibly difficult, and we are by and large under-supported and under-respected and undervalued. And that feeling of suffering, I think, also comes along as a result of decades of malnourishment and over-effort and unwillingness to declare our boundaries and needs.
Oh, definitely.
The trauma of being called needy, like, it's very layered. And if you want to say more about that, I'd love to hear more about that. But I also wanted to hear specifically your thoughts on like symptoms of hunger or undernourishment that women don't recognize as signs of hunger.
I love that question, actually, because I feel like in my experience, the things I've noticed are actually relevant and helpful. And I love when the light bulb goes off for someone too, you know, as their midwife, maybe I've been saying like, hey, more calories might be helpful. Like you're entering a growth spurt. And, you know, I could talk for hours about the way nutrition prevents so many problems and blah, blah, blah. But like you're saying, the truth is kind of in the moment when someone then says, I have insomnia, you know, I wake up every night at 2 a.m. They're obviously pregnant, and I just can't go back to sleep. And the first thing I've said for years is, have you tried eating? Have you tried eating in the middle of the night in your bathroom with your eyes closed? Because this is something I did through all my pregnancies, and I have a whole thing I go through, like, bring your ice pack in there and pack yourself a little snack and just sit it on the counter. And you really don't even have to open your eyes. Every time you get up to pee, try taking a couple bites and see if you're waking up anymore. 9 times out of 10, it works great. And so I think there's things like that. And then maybe even physical pains and then emotional. I mean, there's so many ways this can look where, yeah, it's a surprise. It's a surprise that it's the body's call for more, you know, more nourishment, maybe more calories, more protein, more fat, whatever it is. And women are surprised. And, you know, I think this is a whole other topic, but it's like, oh, pregnancy is a blissful state, you know, never any aches and pains. That's not realistic. It's not, but I think a lot of the things women are dealing with just in normal pregnancies comes back to a really deep level of not being nourished, and nobody is calling it as such, you know, for all the reasons we've talked about. So it's simple, and it's not adding more to what you're doing, you know, having someone to work closely with, customizing it for you, going shopping with you, help. I mean, there's a million ways we can support women, even if we're not midwives or doulas or anything like that. But these little things really do add up. And something like back pain, you know, there's so many ways that women can experience this really simple truth that the body is needing more. It is needing more. And yes, I said that and I meant it. And, you know, in thousands of prenatals over the years, I've questioned myself on that, to be honest. I've like had this conversation with Margo and other midwives where I say to myself, like, is it us? Like, do we have unrealistic expectations? Like, there is something wrong about this conversation where literally every woman that walks through the door, at some point, these are the words that are coming out on my end, which is like, I think you would benefit from more. But yeah, and I'm sure there's stuff there too, but generally it seems to be what's true for most women at one point in their pregnancy, if not for a long time.
Yeah. I love that you named specifically the waking at 2 a.m. And again, in Ayurveda, that's the start of what's called the Vata time, ruled by air and ether. There's emptiness. There's too much space. There's ungroundedness. It's a great time for a high protein snack. And it does feel kind of bad. I had similar experiences like, oh, I've never hated eating so much. And the qualitative difference in my experience of being in my body, if I just did that, like just do it anyway, was night and day. Sleeping better, having less of that restless leg feeling, just generally feeling a bit more sustained and less hypoglycemic, like less kind of crashes in my moods and my energy in general. And feeling, I just anticipated that in my second pregnancy. I anticipated, so I never got to the point where I feel like I was as depleted in my first pregnancy, but you know, it was a different experience on several levels, but I felt much more nourished throughout and was able to enjoy being pregnant more. And I think that there was some element of the nutrition, like just being willing to do what needs to be done and make that adaptation. And cultivating in myself more reverence in general for the undertaking that is pregnancy, birth, and motherhood. Like, I think there's just a large amount of disrespect for what it is. And that's the only word I can find to describe what I mean. People just don't respect what a big deal it is to carry a pregnancy, to grow a life, to birth it, to nurture it, while maintaining your own intactness.
You're so right. You're so right. I mean, I always think of, I think I've said this on podcast, just the mainstream nutritional recommendation in pregnancy, right, is like 300 extra calories. That's a whole conversation. But yeah, I think there's this idea that what you said, pregnancy should just be easy and really your body should just stay the same. You know, you might need a couple of extra bigger shirts, but like all of the misconceptions, whereas you're growing another body and a placenta, and then the soul and the spirit of the baby. And to that, I say, like, how much of what we're eating or nourishing or needing is really coming from the baby? Like, I love that conversation too. So if you're looking for, you know, the way you used to feel, like, oh, well, hunger used to feel like this, this is what I associate hunger feeling like, I would say for me in pregnancy, like, it hasn't felt like that. And I've had to switch, you know, my thinking and my feeling around it to be like, I think this is my baby telling me I need food. Like, that 2 a.m. waking up isn't hunger. It's, you know, a baby that's moving and kicking and squirming, needing food, because we all know if you've been there, you eat, the baby starts moving like crazy, you pass out and go back to sleep. So like, who's leading who here?
Yeah, that is really, I mean, a significant part of the conversation, I think, is shifting our listening. And of course, it's still your body, and there is this whole other massive layer of information, like a whole other being communicating through your body. And if there hasn't been a high level of listening to begin with, that's like an extra amount of effort that pregnancy asks of us. And so maybe that's something, you know, that I've recognized is also the high level of dissociation from one's body that most people in general are walking around with, but in particular women. You know, we override our period, we override our fatigue, we override our emotional fatigue, we silence our intuition. And, you know, just to drop this reference, the way that a menstrual cycle mirrors a pregnancy postpartum cycle, no one, I don't know anyone who goes into their first pregnancy equipped or practiced at doing this. So it's a lot of, for me, there's a lot of like righteous anger about that and a desire to ignite some passion and like collective reclamation for this. And being a demonstration of the effort that it takes, but it's also like the, even just having this conversation to me feels like I asked you to help me set and hold this boundary around what it is to care for myself and nurture my body. And I think that's significant too. Having this conversation feels really significant in that larger practice of like gathering the women again, gathering the women in a sense of this is sacred. We need to hold on to this wisdom. If we don't do it, no one will.
Yeah, there is such practical wisdom. There's a nice spider coming down here right on my table. Huh. Mama spider has her feminine wisdom for us. Oh, geez. I hope she stays over there, though. Yeah, there is such practical wisdom. And nowadays, of course, so many resources, so many things. It's overwhelming in a way to have so many ideas and resources. And again, I think that's the beginning of a really healthy conversation with someone around this topic. It's usually how I start it. You know, here is information. Here's what we think we know. Here's the recommendations. And most of the women I work with, especially first-time moms, it really takes some love and nurturing to then help them get out of that space and make this their own. Because initially, the world is such that they're met with this information. And the most common response is, I'm not doing it right. I'm not doing well enough. And, you know, I've been there a million times in my own way, supporting that and personally, because it's a theme for all of us. So it's like, then how do we take the information and not turn it into that, not turn it into this, like, I'm not good enough or I could always do better. It's using your brain to then, like I think you're saying, kind of identify with your body. Like, I know this now. I know what pregnancy may need, but here I am in my body and my experience. And how am I feeling in my body? And, you know, emotions. People aren't used to feeling anything anywhere. So we've got all this stuff circulating, not to mention how food feels in their body. So I'm just saying it's like a huge, like artistic piece of work for this pregnant woman to tackle this and hopefully be supported in like whittling it down to something that actually works for her. Like, it's really hard for me as a midwife sometimes when someone takes the information and they think that's it, you know, and they're like, well, I can't do this, or they have kind of all these blocks. And it's like, no, like, this is the walk.
Yeah.
The project is to figure out how to nourish yourself with all of this and make it yours and make it work and feel good and grow a healthy baby. And yes, that all sounds like a lot, but that's also what we were meant to do. And like you say, this is a serious undertaking. This, you know, isn't something you just read a book on and go on your way. Most people just, you know, have too many blocks and conditioning around making it easy.
Yeah. There's something in the there's something curious to me about the number of like first-time moms that I see who have access to a lot of information and resist, it seems like resist with every ounce of energy they have, accepting that they will need help before, during, after. And I feel so passionately about that because obviously my role in the world is partially doula, and I'm like, really, really, it's so great. Not because I'm so great, but because it's so great to be supported. And I've had the experience of being supported, and I've had the experience of having a lot of help and it just wasn't enough, and really suffering, struggling through that experience of like being so depleted and then having to do the work of finding help, which when you're depleted is that much harder. And also I really appreciate and want to like flesh out more what you said about figuring out how this largely external information, like developing that filter, the strength of our own personal filter. How does this apply to me? It's like you alluded to types of eating. I was vegetarian for two different stints in my life, and one of those stints resulted in a menstrual hemorrhage. And it was like, okay, we're eating meat again forever and always. And it was an opportunity to recognize that, like, I chose to not eat meat because of something outside myself, not because my insides were like, I think this is the best thing for us. Because clearly my insides did not think that was the best thing for us. So, yeah, recognizing, I'm curious if you have like your own personal story of, learning your body's language.
I'm sure I do. I've tried every way of eating under the sun in my 44 years, as most people have, right? For all the reasons from, I don't know, just fun and experimenting to, I was a vegetarian most of my teenage years. I had one vegetarian pregnancy, actually, of my 10. So I've been there, and it's just so personal. You know, I obviously like can't really speak for or understand why anyone else does things, but to me, it felt like a definite mechanism of control over something that I was maybe trying to solve, right? Whether it's health related or just kind of playing around with it, or I don't know, being outwardly influenced by people or belief systems or something you read. I think every way of eating out there, of course, has its support. And right, you can read anything you want to read. There's always somebody that it's like working for and somebody that it's not working for. So I can't think of anything in particular other than I'm just attuned to the way my body feels normally and, you know, what feels good and how I'm sleeping or how my energy is. And I've just always used that to determine what should go in, you know? So in some ways it hasn't really felt that complicated. Although, you know, speaking of postpartum and postpartum stuff, we're our best teachers. So you were talking about like a wanting to support people, and some people like don't want this or this information. We have to want to help ourselves at a certain point. And sometimes it's after something rough, like, you know, like a rough postpartum. And for me, that was definitely, my postpartums have been my best teachers. You know, just having lots of migraines, for example, had been a common theme for me for a long time with my postpartum times, and not enough breast milk or feeling like I was really struggling. And of course, you know, maybe it was my sixth baby or my seventh baby and feeling like, oh, well, you know, I know it'll work. Like, I know I can feed this baby, but just feeling really not full of vitality, you know, and kind of blaming that on having a lot of children. So anyway, fast forward, the last couple of postpartums have been really nourishing. Taking the Ayurvedic perspective for me in this last, my last postpartum was life-changing. And I will so humbly admit that to anyone that wants to listen, because I really resisted that for a long time. I just didn't think it sounded like something my body would want. I didn't want to do it. I didn't want to eat lots of rice. I didn't, you know, I just had my mind around it. And I finally just had to try it and was led to that place. And it was a completely different experience, my healing, everything. So I think no matter how many babies we have, we're always learning things and our bodies are receptive in the ways they are at that time. But yeah, really kind of breaking down any mental barriers to things sometimes is the key. And I see that a lot as a midwife when I'm working with, you know, maybe vegans. There is a huge mental barrier, of course, right? And it might be spiritual, it might be emotional to not eating animal products, but sometimes our bodies just need what they need. And quick story, a former client of mine was in that boat. Her first pregnancy was vegan. From what I understand, it was fine. She had a really rough birth though, lost a lot of blood after birth. And so going into the second pregnancy, was very depleted. And long story short, we worked together through her pregnancy and of her own accord, I think sort of late into the first trimester, she was just not in a good place. She didn't look well. Any kind of like blood test, urine test she did, like she didn't seem healthy. And I was willing to hold that for her in that way. Like, okay, well, what do you think you need? And how can we help you if you're going to stick with this? And she decided one night, she's like, I just broke down and I had to like go eat a steak. And that was what this pregnancy needed. And it was hard and it wasn't hard all at the same time because I felt so good afterwards. So anyway, I'm sure it works the other way too, but are we listening and are we willing to like break that open for ourselves if we need to?
Yeah, there's so much to say about this mind-body connection. I find it such a compelling inquiry. And a similar story, a friend has experienced a lot of just depletion and I've asked her about incorporating some more meat and she's like, I just can't digest it. I can't digest it. I'm like, okay, well, at what point in your life were you not able to digest it? Because you're clearly in a different place now. You've birthed three children and it might be time, both like your it's time that your body is able to do it and time to give that back to yourself or make that adjustment. And again, you say this and walk this very well. Like you leave a lot of space for the innate brilliance of others to show up and show itself. And that's something that I've really admired about you. I have to take time to remind myself that sometimes like my inner perfectionist likes to wield the magic wand, be like, no, I know the secrets, but it is a much more humbling path than that. I don't think there's one right answer, but I do think that these key components that have proven themselves over millennia of treating the pregnant body as sacred and caring for the mother in a very distinct, special, specific way. That is knowledge that I believe is intact and must be carried forward.
I love that. It's so sacred. So just helping women kind of draw that out in whatever ways and all the ways. And, you know, food is an area of difficulty, then working on all the other stuff too can help that bring into balance. Because as we both know, it doesn't stand alone. It's representative of so many things. Our relationships, even like so many things that, you know, we don't have time to get into, but really do affect the way someone either wants to or doesn't want to feed their body and the resources they have or what they feel like they have to spend on food. I mean, there's just a million things that it draws into question, but I think they're all the exciting topics and the ways that women can really have breakthroughs, you know, emotionally, especially in their own bodies, and find what they need to like want to do this and not have it be another thing on the list that someone's telling them to do, but have it be part of them that they feel really good about. And, you know, hopefully they have that amazing birth and lots of breast milk and they feel great in the postpartum and they have taught themselves, right? They've been their own teacher, they've been their own student. And then that going forward is so valuable for other women to hear, you know, that there isn't one way, but we do have to care and we often do have to make an effort. And sometimes it's hard, but it's worth it.
I love talking to you, Maren. I'm so grateful for your wisdom and your passion and your time today. Thank you. I feel like we could do a series on this, a workshop series, a podcast series, whatever you want.
I know, maybe we should do that because I feel like that was a great conversation and we only just scratched the absolute surface of the food conversation. Maybe this is a thing we got to do.
All right. That'd be fun. I'm down. More time with Maren is always a yes.
More time with Stacey. That would be really fun. Okay. Well, to be continued then, perhaps.
Continued. Is there anything you would like to share with people in this moment about what you're up to, where to find you, other than your website, which I will include?
We're working on a new project called the Indie Birth Institute here in Kentucky. So people can check that out if they'd like to. It's indiebirthinstitute.org, and we are interested in creating a sacred physical space for women to come birth at and with us and our students. So we'd love more support with that. But otherwise, just thanks for having me, as always. I love chatting with you.
Thank you, Maren.